We have several conversations happening today. So our next group of folks that are about to come out on stage are our mid-career professionals. And so what was really interesting when we did our research is that we talked to a lot of folks who were in various stages of transition. And we talked to a lot of folks who was like, this happened and we had to make a pivot. And so we really wanted to know what that was like. Come on out. And so one of these people you may really recognize, come on out this way. So we have... And we'll go ahead and let you guys get seated, and I'll introduce you all. So with us today, we have Shay Rainey. She's from Boston. Anybody from Boston, give it up. Woo-hoo! We have Tracy Carson, who is from Milwaukee. She's a project manager in Milwaukee. We have Andrew Shepherd, who is from Wichita. Give it up for Andrew. Wichita. And we have our very own Brianna Rogers from Oakland, California. Well, she's in Oakland, but she's from Berkeley. She's from Berkeley, California, so give it up for Brianna. All right, so are you ready to go?
Yep.
Okay, so Tracy, she's a project manager and she works for JCP Construction. So again, you're talking about occupational segregation and where people show up in representation. There aren't a lot of people that look like you in project management. Do you want to... tell us a little bit about your work.
Okay, it's very interesting. I actually work for JCP Construction, as Michelle has said, and as a project manager, well, I came to JCP from another company. I was working on Northwestern Mutual's corporate office, and JCP Construction was a subcontractor under me. At the time, I was an engineer. And so we kind of met, and I did a few battles with them as far as making sure that they came up to par on my project. And it was about a 3-4 year thing. Once they did, I was leaving that project, and they asked me, where am I going? And so that's how I ended up coming to JCP Construction.
Right.
I found them good, and they found me acceptable.
And what's interesting about it, that only 9% of construction workers are female, and 11% are black. So again, you occupy a really rare space in workforce development. And again, when we're trying to expand our thinking around career navigation and creating opportunities and looking for ways to disrupt occupational segregation, we have people like Tracy that we look to, like, this is where we need to go and how do we create these opportunities for more folks. Andrew, tell us a little bit about your work.
My name's Andrew Shepherd. I am a senior pipeline technician for Northern Natural Gas. My current focus is mechanical and controls. As a company, we operate and maintain an interstate pipeline system where we deliver natural gas product to our customers. And if I may, I would like to praise God today for allowing me to be here. He's truly been my compass throughout this entire journey. So.
Very good, very good.
Amen.
Yeah, give it up. So Shay, we met Shay in Boston, and Shay started out as a home health aide and is now a corporate social responsibility. You got a promotion. This was project manager, but you are now... every time I talk to Shay, she has a promotion for Air Wellness. Tell us a little bit about your work.
My current work.
Your current work.
Okay. So I currently work for Air Wellness, which is a multi-state operating cannabis company. I still am a project manager, but now I am the director for the corporate social responsibility department. Thank you. And typically what I do across the 8 states, unfortunately Memphis has not legalized cannabis and marijuana, so we're not operating here, but in the few that we do operate, I try to go into neighborhoods that were disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. And as we often know, most times those areas are people that look like myself, Hispanic, black and brown communities, and we try to promote equity. and uplift whatever their needs are at the moment. And so a big part of AIR's pillars is being a force for good, a part of the CSR team. And so I really try to embody that by getting to know the people in the areas we serve. Like she said, I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. It's legalized, it's a different game there. We have a dispensary on every corner. So when I go into other areas like Illinois, it gets a little more difficult, but I'm navigating and making sure we promote equity across the board.
And then last but certainly not least, we have Brianna Rogers. And so you may have seen Brianna on stage, you may have seen her play in the game, but I'm the in-app game
the leaderboard.
But Shay, welcome to the stage. Tell us a little bit about your work.
Brianna.
Sorry, I'm not shaming you.
Thank you, guys. My name is Brianna Rogers, and I work for Rework the Bay. Rework the Bay is an initiative. We're a project of the San Francisco Foundation. So I'm a funder, but we're a funders collaborative, right? And then also, too, I fundraise. So I wear two hats. I'm a funder and a grantee. But our initiative aims to provide increased access, the number of good jobs in the Bay Area, increase equitable access to those jobs, and then we also address the affordable supports that are needed to sustain work, like childcare, transportation, housing. And so that's pretty much what we do. And we work within the 9-county Bay Area.
Okay. Thank you. So Tracy, one of the things that we've talked about before in our career navigation work is access to resource, information access, right? So I'm just curious, as a project manager, as a Black woman in construction, how did you go about finding the resources you needed for your career when you transitioned?
The resources were always there. Even though you feel that as a Black woman, as a Black person and a woman, you feel like you cannot access it because maybe the person, most people that I worked for were white and male. And a lot of times in Wisconsin, it's not the most positive environment.
We'll say more about that.
Yeah. So you had to understand that the resource is there, but you have to know how to access it, like you said. And you can't be angry, and you can't be, you know, well, they're holding me down. I looked at it as a place where ask the question. If they don't give you the answer, they'll always give you the hard way to go through it. But once you learn how to go through it, once you go through it that hard way, you got the answers. Now you can be a source to the next person. So it's fine. A lot of things I learned trial by fire.
And you mentioned, you talked about how you use the negatives as fuel, but you gave a really great example about being in the field and what they would ask you to do in a way to try and kind of break you and what you did.
My first jobs were actually on the roads, and so I was a healthcare instructor at that time. But they thought it was a fun thing to make me stake out the project. And that means you go out, you go down the road, and you're staking, you're hammering in project stakes and laying out the project. So anyway, I started off a little clumsy, but as I was going through my healthcare instructing and all of that, it became a very easy task to do. And so I was doing it all by myself, and it wasn't fun for them anymore. And that's what I mean by just taking the challenge and going through it, and you learn. And you become an expert just because of what you went through, you know? You don't have to complain about it all the time, even though we do all the time, but yeah, it worked out.
And Andrew, you had a completely unexpected and unwanted career interruption that was completely out of your control, but you've rebounded, but part of that transition landed you back in school. Can you share more about the journey, not what happened, but the journey and where you struggled?
Sure. After losing my job, I would best describe it as the searing pain of rejection. I made it through the interview process with many top natural gas companies, and I was told no by all of them. I was running out of options, I was running out of time. That voice inside of me kept saying, higher education, go back to school. So I had to let go, I had to let God. And as soon as I did that, I show up to the college unannounced one day, and Dave Mullins gave me 10 minutes of his time when I needed it the most. And I told him my story. He told me he would do whatever he could to help me succeed. So.
And Brianna, let's talk about your career change, career transitions.
Definitely. I remember in 2009, I had a shift. That wasn't planned. In 2009, I was convicted of a felony, and I had to kind of reinvent myself. I had to rewrite myself, right, into history, if you will, when I finally finished that five-year felony conviction, which happened in, I think, 2014. So 2014, here we're on 2024, so that was 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, right, I utilized the Clean Slate program, right, expunged my record and see, and I was ready to go. And I used post-secondary education as well to kind of, you know, find my freedom and reinvent myself as well. Started off with Peralta Community College in California in the Bay. And I realized that I was amazing at school. I mean, amazing, right? And so I ran for student government. Here I am, 32 years old, right, grown, I had a daughter and everything, running for student government. So now I'm student body president at the community college, okay? And I want to say that because, thank you. What happened was, anyways, when you're an adult and you have a lens of life, real life experience, real lived experiences, and now I'm going into a system, and I saw all these problems with the system. Well, kids don't know, but me, I saw, right? So I was complaining about things. And I remember President Debbie Budd, she was the president, she was like, who is this girl? She called me in and she told me power lived with governance. Power lived, you know, in the student body. And so what you want to do is become a part of it. So I did all that, right? Long story short, after that, went to UC Berkeley, realized again, there's problems here, right? Why is the black population at UC Berkeley only 2%? So I leaned into these student worker roles, right? Organizing and advocating and gathering students and providing resources for black transfer students that didn't have any. And, you know, that landed me in Congresswoman Barbara Lee's office. I was interning for her. I thought I wanted to be her one day, right? Or go into law maybe, right? Because there's all these programs. Once you realize where the opportunities lie and what rocks to look under, that's the thing. You don't know what rocks to look under if no one in your family, right? You don't have any mother, father, aunties, and things like that. I was also, you know, I had experienced the foster care system growing up. So there's just lots of lost in the sauce, no mentorship, no guidance, nobody, right? And you become in this survival mode. And then you learn to master. I mastered the tools of survival mode. And when I got into post-secondary education, I realized I'm actually really, really good at this. And, you know, joined organizations and just joined societies, and now I'm on boards. And it allows you to develop yourself. It allows you to imagine yourself beyond your current circumstance. And that's just what I did, and I just kind of took advantage of every wave that came to me. I ended up at Georgetown University. National Urban Fellows funded my entire grad school at Georgetown. And part of that 14-month accelerated program was a 9-month component of a fellowship. They placed me at the Certna Foundation in New York with the Andrus Family Fund. And that was my first time kind of splashing around in philanthropy. And that's when I realized people like me are necessary and needed in spaces like this,
fantastic,
right? And that's how I ended up here.
So this is a great way segue to you, Shay. So if any of you have seen the videos, particularly around Boston, Shay referenced the leprechauns under the stairs who helped her, right? But Shay, she was like, are you actually gonna say, but you're on video saying that. So, but Shay, when you wanna talk about, because you got to where you are,
yeah.
Through the leprechauns.
I did say it, and I stand by those leprechauns. They are still there. If you ever visit Boston, Massachusetts, I recommend you visit the Boston Public Library on Boylston Street. It is more than just history. It is a plethora of resources. And like you said, whether it's housing, food insecurities, childcare, they have it. Me and Brianna actually have a similar story. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing.
Absolutely.
And I'm actually a big part of the Clean Slate initiative that we run in Boston,
yeah.
Massachusetts, so we should connect afterwards. But I say that to say, when I met Michelle, I was actually a case manager working in healthcare, And then I got into some situations, and you know, similar to what you said, you have to know where to look. Yep. And I have the privilege of being born and raised in Boston. I also have a privilege of having a mother who's an educator. And so she instilled in me that like education is key, and as long as you have knowledge, then you have power. And so I went to the library, met with the leprechauns under the stairs, and they said, look, these are the things that you went through, these are the things that you have done, and here are a bunch of opportunities for you. And at the time, there just happened to be all these marijuana companies, whether they're medical or recreational, and full transparent, I love the plant. So why would I not transfer those skills into a business where I can actually benefit from it? And most importantly, I had to do some research and see, okay, there's a lot of companies that are doing it. It's a lot of them saying we're doing it the right way. But when I really looked into Air Wellness's pillars and where they're operating and who they're actually serving, I realized that the company didn't have a lot of people that look like me. They do now. And they made it a part of their mission to not just support minorities who were affected by it, but specifically women as well. Mm. And so I now have the platform and the skills due to the people under the stairs pointing me in a direction to take some classes, get certified, become more educated, and not just using the product, but understanding what it can do medicinally for people. And that was what really helped push my change. So now I go around breaking stigmas, educating people against the myths versus the facts on how the plant could be used, most importantly. But then it also helps me show people that there's a career path for you. Just figure out what it is that you have a passion about, who can support you, and take it from there and go.
So what's beautiful about all of these conversations to me is that there are some folks who faced internal struggle, and then there are folks, and they were able to turn to mentors, and the idea that the resources are there, and this is something that we know, the resources are there, so how do people have access to the resources? And so when we think about career navigation, what is it that we can do in our respective spaces to shift that, right? And I think the other piece that you said, and this is where my 56-year-old brain just loses it. I don't know what I was going to say, so I'm just going to keep it moving. But anyways, you were talking about, I don't know what she was talking about. I mean, I do know, but I can't remember, but it may come to me anyways. But anyways, so I think that's really important. As we wrap up this conversation, what is it that you want people to know about mid-career transitions, and where do we need to shift in workforce development to support that?
You guys can go first.
So I guess for me it would be any adult that is making a shift in a career change, I think it's important to find people that not just look like you, but that understand you. And having a mentor or just having that support system is very important. Like, obviously we all have families and we want money, but money isn't everything, and it sure doesn't buy happiness. We've learned that the hard way sometimes. But once you figure out what it is you want to do, just go for it and don't take no for an answer. Tap into every resource possible. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah, you said it. A mouthful, and that's pretty much it. Making a shift at this time, going from engineering to managing, and you know, having crews underneath me, or working with me, we'll put it that way. It took someone that understood who I was as a person. I have to give a shout out to JCP Construction, and Cliff is here, and all of the Phelps brothers, James and Jalen, and my team back at home. Sorry about that. But just wanted to give a shout out, because everyone, they made it so easy for me to make the transition. So I would say, if there's an open door for you to go through, I was always told, go through the open door. You know, if it's closed, it's closed for a reason. Go through the open door. And as Andrew said, I give honor to God, because he showed me the right open doors. So I believe that, you know, if you just go through the right door, you'll get there. Yeah.
I would say definitely don't be afraid to use your resources. I know for me it was really hard to go back to school at 39 years old. But the minute I did, Northern Natural Gas called me 2 weeks after to offer me a full-time position. I couldn't take that position. I had to turn it down. Now I'm committed to school. They called me that same day and offered an internship with them, which Dave Mullins became the key element after that. He allowed me to use that internship for credit towards my degree. He navigated me to the workforce scholarship, which paid for so much: tuition, books, a month of our mortgage, our highest bill of the summer, so many things. So many blessings just started pouring in, and it was truly amazing. I'm thankful for men like Dave Mullins and everybody else who worked at the workforce to help me out and my family in my time of need. And yeah, I just say, don't be afraid to ask for help, because it's there.
And of course, we want to know, like, those resources should be made available to everybody, right? Like, that's a beautiful thing that you had access to those resources. But our job is like, how do we make them available to all? How do we make them all? That is fantastic. I know what I was going to say before we get to you. What I hear from Brianna and Tracy, and well, from everybody really, is about when we think about career navigation, it's like, how do we create space for people to have experiences that allow them to figure out what they're good at? I don't know I'm good at school unless I'm given the space and the opportunity to explore it. So again, when we think about expanding how we think about career navigation, it's not just about the career pathways, it's about what it means to self-assess, it's what it means about career exploration, it's what it means about career connecting to jobs, and what are the barriers, and what are the facilitators, and so where do we change when we see the barriers, and what do we lift up when we see what's working, right? So I just appreciate you saying that, and then I will let you have the last word about it.
For sure, and what doors need to be opened or kicked down, right? I heard you. I'm a table shaker, so I encourage everyone to kick down those doors, right? No, seriously, sometimes you do need to do that, because sometimes historically, systematically, those doors are shut for certain people, but they open wide for others, you know? So you need to challenge the current status quo. One last thing I want to leave folks with is, you spoke truth to power here. When talking about being 39 years old, 32, 33, right, in your 30s, going through education, scholarships, I'm talking to the funders now. So think about funding innovatively, right? I want to say this because when you fund business per usual, it's business per usual. When you fund spaces and you think innovatively, even though you can't see the light at the end of the rainbow, talking about the KPIs, right? Throw that out the window, because sometimes that seed that's planted, it takes years. I mean, I started my first class in 2014. It's 2024. I'm on the main stage now, right? And so think long term and think outside the box, because as much as you think you are the experts, you're not necessarily the experts of it all. We're not necessarily the experts of it all. And lean into community and people with personal lived experience.
So I could continue this conversation for a long time, but we are going to move on. So let's thank our speakers, amazing speakers. You guys did fantastic.
State of Our Workforce, Where Are We Now? Is a production of the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. This episode was produced by Josh Enoch. The music in this episode is produced by Alex Productions. You can find past episodes of State of Our Workforce on our website at www.nationalfund.org. State of Our Workforce is also available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you may listen. State of Our Workforce airs live monthly on LinkedIn. Follow the National Fund for Workforce Solutions on LinkedIn to get updates about the next live recording of State of Our Workforce.